many galaxies. Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. I'm here because it matters. And I suspect you're here because it matters. And guess what? You matter. And I'm glad you're here. Are you ready for the Halloween party? Got your ticket? Got your costume? You're all ready to go? And, you don't have to have a costume to come to the party. But we're going to give a prize away for the best costume. And, of course, for us to see your costume, you have to have a webcam. But we'll let you come on with your webcam and show us your costume. And we'll judge what's the best costume we see. And it's a great prize. So we've got some more prizes for some other contests. We're going to have a great time. It's October 31st, and it will be at regular showtime. Now, we don't normally do a show on Saturdays. October 31st is a Saturday. But we will be doing a Halloween show, a Halloween party. And it's live. It's on our private TV channel. Got to have a ticket. And when you buy your ticket, two things happen. You get an immediate download of a free ebook called The Haunted House. And it's based on real events that happened long before Amityville Horror. Of course, Amityville Horror is based on real events too. But this was long before that. So you get that free download immediately. You also get your password to get into the private TV channel. And you get that immediately. So how much does one of these plush events cost? Cost you $5. $5 is all it costs for the ticket. That helps the show, and we'll have a great time, and you might win one of the prizes. Did you watch my video blog today, the vlog? Did you watch that? If you did, you know that there's something coming up in the next few days that's pretty exciting and pretty important. And I was talking today with Robert Morningstar about it, and I think it's going to be I think it's going to be some blockbuster stuff. But anyway, you know about it if you saw the video blog. Also, you know, you can sign up as a friend at MySpace. If you're on MySpace, you can sign up as a friend on my page. I'd love to have you. I'm at Facebook as well, and we'd just love to have you. It's not difficult to do. So go over there and take a look at that and do it. My guest tonight is going to be someone that you have heard of, someone you're familiar with. His name is Norio Hayakawa. And you're familiar with him probably because of his research, investigation, and reporting on Area 51. He really put a lot of information out there for us on Area 51. He's involved in researching and investigating and reporting on other things as well. And you've probably either seen him at a conference or you've seen him on DVDs or... When I first saw him on an old VHS tape years ago. He's been around a while, and he's here tonight. We'll be back with Norio Hayakawa right after this. My guest is Norio Hayakawa, and as I said, you probably know him best from his work, his investigations, his reporting on Area 51. You've seen him in conferences, you've seen him in documentaries, you've perhaps met him in person and heard him speak, and you've heard him on radio shows all across the country. It's my pleasure to welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, for the first time in 9 years of doing this show, this is the first time we've had Norio Hayakawa. But welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Kevin, and for inviting me to your show.
Now, yesterday was your birthday, right?
That's correct.
Well, even though I told you happy birthday in person on the phone yesterday, let me do it on the air. Happy birthday. We're glad you made it another year, and we hope many, many more.
Thank you very much. I just turned 65, and I'm still going strong, and I'm enjoying living here in this very great state of New Mexico.
Yeah, you used to live out in California, right?
That's correct, Kevin. I lived in California for many, many years. Actually, since 1982, I've lived in California near Los Angeles. And just last year, my wife and I decided to retire and moved here to this mysterious state of New Mexico. But yes, I was a long-time resident of California, and that's why I was able to do a lot of research in the nearby Nevada areas since about 1990.
Now, you know, you have just you dug into Area 51 more, I guess, than anybody else out there. You researched it, you've done videos on this, you've done documentaries, you've spoken at conferences. Recently, within the past year or two, we've been hearing these rumors that Area 51 is not where the real action is now, that the real action has moved from Area 51. What can you tell us about that?
Well, actually, Kevin, that is not quite the case in reality. In reality, the facilities or the complex at Groom Lake or Area 51 has been steadily increasing. In fact, just last year they started building a huge, huge hangar over there, which is the size of four times the size of the H-18 hangar at Groom Lake. And then also 2 years ago, they started building this new huge tower right near the northern end of the tarmac. And then they have new storage facilities and other new buildings and water tanks, and so it is constantly conducting, in my view, various types of programs, and the number of employees haven't decreased. It's constant, and sometimes it increases depending on what type of things they're doing. So the rumors that started around 1994, saying that the facilities at Area 51 had moved to another location, such as Utah, is not really true. So So that's the reality, Kevin. Area 51 still exists and still has a lot of things going on. And I'm not saying that there aren't other places in the United States, such as Utah, where new types of black projects could be going on, like the Dugway Proving Grounds, for example, in Utah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, let me ask this. In all of your investigation of Area 51, quite obviously, I mean, there can be no doubt it's there. I think it's kind of curious that our first aerial photographs that were ever available of Area 51 were from a Russian satellite. But
correct.
So it was no secret to them. It was just a secret to us.
That's correct, Kevin.
Yeah, and we'll come back to that.
88.
Yeah, we'll come back to that because I find that to be really interesting. But in all of the investigation and everything, maybe you can provide an answer to this question. In the movie Independence Day, I don't know if you've seen that, but
yes, I have.
Okay, in that movie, there is a scene where the president is on board Air Force One, and they're having a big row, a big argument. And he says, the subject of Area 51 comes up, and he says, the president says to the scientist father, "Sir, let me assure you, there is no such thing as an Area 51. That's all tabloid stuff." And then his, I think it's his Secretary of Defense says, "Mr. President, that's not entirely accurate." Now, that makes good TV. That's a good, that makes something interesting for the film. But let me ask you, do you have any indication, any knowledge about, or any information about, whether the presidents are informed that it is real, and do the presidents ever go there and take a look at the place?
Well, the president is aware of the Groom Lake complex or Area 51. Every president that comes in is given briefings on the purpose, existence, and the purpose of Area 51. In fact, every president, incoming president, Clinton, you name it, Carter, you name it, any president, Obama, you name it, any president is given a basic briefing about this facility. And in fact, the government makes a statement usually once every year about the that there is an operating base at Groom Lake, and you know, that some things are over there are, you know, classified. And but beyond that, they haven't made any statements. Mm-hmm. And because it is a huge complex and a lot of things are going on over there at this location, and it's the multi... the defense industry complex that involves, companies like Lockheed and, you know, General Atomics, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, you name it, PRW even. They are doing various types of compartmentalized programs under the so-called black budget programs. Now, there are so-called white programs that's basically not as secretive, but there's a lot of things going on. Even today, there are an estimated, anywhere from 1,500 to 1,800 employees working there, either on a shift basis or some workers work, for a couple of weeks, or some just commute just a day on a daily basis.
All right, now
in the dormitories.
So the presidents know it's there.
That's right.
But they are not briefed on any of the alleged alien stuff that's happening there, right?
Well, they are not briefed on that subject because, first of all, except that there's no doubt that this was the plan of the so-called cover story. Cover stories are very important aspects of defense contractors.
Okay, so you're saying that the stories about aliens being there were just cover stories? They were not for real?
Well, there is no hard evidence, Kevin, that this place has anything to do with aliens. That's as far as our physical reality is concerned. But the Air Force and defense contractors have concocted a brilliant scenario in the early 1980s, lasting till the mid-1990s, to associate this location with so-called alien presence or alien technology. This was, in my opinion, a brilliantly concocted distraction to detract attention away from those who scrutinize the government's black programs, including such items as new generation of radar technology, new generation of hypersonic spy planes, and then also the new generations of remotely controlled platforms known as UAVs and UCAVs, which were beginning to be developed already in the early 1980s and then continued on to more new generations of these technologies. Now, Area 51 is also a place where the leading-edge technology in radar system has been tested. And, you know, but all of these programs are, you can get some information on some of these programs, but, you know, the whenever there is a black budget program, the defense contractors need some cover story to detract attention away or bring ridicule to those who try to associate that military-industrial complex at Area 51. But I'm just talking right now about physical level of reality. There are, in my opinion, there are various types of realities that coexist in this cosmos, but I'm basically right now speaking only about the physical reality level.
Okay, now, there are a couple of things about what we've talked about so far that I want to go back and sort of examine a little bit. But now, it's interesting what you said about this being a cover story, because I had someone tell me this who was in the Air Force. He was retired, and he was telling me that about it being a cover story. And he said, but where you really ought to look if you want to find something like that, talking about the extraterrestrials, he said you really ought to look at Indian Springs. So I started looking at Indian Springs and trying to find out what I could find out about it, and ran across Charles Hall. Now, this was several years ago, and Charles Hall used to be stationed at Indian Springs. He was in the Air Force, and he's written some books about these tall, he calls them tall white aliens, in a base that's at the end of the valley, on the range there, at the end of the range, at Indian Springs. And he talks very openly about the fact that he has met with them personally. He's talked to them, became not friends, but on friendly terms with some specific ones of them that he dealt with all the time. And he says that there is a huge base at the end of that valley that is the alien base. Have you heard anything about that? And the reason I ask is because it is under the command of Nellis, which is, of course, Area 51.
Yes, Kelvin. Indian Springs is important. There's no question about it. In the past 10 years or so, they have begun to concentrate more and more in the remotely controlled platforms, and for example, unmanned combat aerial vehicles, some of which had been used in Iraq and even in Afghanistan, and it's now called Creech Air Force Base, but they specialize in remotely controlled platforms and you know, other types of UAVs that almost look like a flying saucer. But anyway, yes, I did hear about other items about Indian Springs Air Force Base, but you know, there are many, many interesting locations, no question about it, in Nevada and Southern California. I've visited many of the fascinating areas you know, in Southern California, and there's no question that there is concealment, and but when it comes to the actual physical evidence of physical extraterrestrial entities, it is very difficult to come up with a definite physical evidence. I'm just talking about the physical.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about the paranormal aspect of things.
But let me tell you something.
Anyway,
physical evidence includes eyewitnesses.
Yes.
It's not forensic.
For being active at Area 51 was to bring out the reality of the government's duty to compensate the workers, former workers over there, especially during the 1990s, who were, who became sick due to contact with toxic chemicals while working on stealth technology. And then also my concern was the illegal dumping of toxic materials on open pits at Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my great concern, and that is the reason why, Kevin, I held the large rally right at Area 51, right next to, actually, the boundary line of Area 51 in 1998.
Okay, Norio, we have to step away for a break, and when we come back, we'll pick up right there. We'll be back, folks, with Norio Hayakawa right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Norio Hayakawa. Norio, you were talking about this rally that you held right next to the boundary line of Area 51. And that was in when, 1998?
That's correct, Kevin. In 1998, I held this unprecedented rally. It was called the People's Rally. At Area 51, and the purpose of that rally was to address this issue of the compensation that was long overdue to former workers who got sick at Area 51. But also other issues were addressed, such as our demand for the government to erect a clearly marked boundary with a definite fence and wall for safety's sake. And then the other one was for the guard shack at Area 51, the boundary area, to be moved right at the boundary line where it should belong. Now, this is one of the only places in the world where if you go to the guard shack, you're already inside, at least a third of a mile inside the boundary, and this is not right. So our demand was for the Air Force to build a new guard shack right at the boundary line of Area 51, the east, east gate. I'm not talking about the back gate near Rachel, but I'm talking about the east gate on Groom Lake Road. And that was our concern. And then lastly, our concern was for the government to admit that there is a facility over there. And, because of the activism, such as, this type of activism that I was involved in, the results, started coming, out. And it was just about last year, a year and a half ago, that the government finally began to compensate former workers who had been, ill, and some of them who even died. And they compensated the spouses of the workers. But it was a terrible thing, because at that time the U.S. government denied that there is a facility. About 4 or 5 years ago, they came out with a statement saying that, yes, there is a facility, but they just didn't know what to call it, so they called it an operating base at Groom Lake. But it's definite. The government does admit that it exists. I am very much into activism to bring out the government's, responsibility, especially in terms of environmental issues. This is a very important issue. And I moved to New Mexico last year from California, and now I am focusing my attention to another area of New Mexico, which I think had a lot of environmental problems, namely the alleged Dulce, New Mexico area, which is, there's a strange rumor that there is a government alien underground biological laboratory right outside of a town called Dulce, which is in the Hickory Apache Reservation. And so that is my focus right now. And I also see that there could be some environmental issues that need to be brought out. And this is the reason why, Kevin, I decided to hold this past March, the first time ever, conference right in Dulce. It was called the Dulce Base Underground Base Conference, Fact or Fiction.
And you held that right in Dulce, right?
We held a conference right in the middle of Dulce itself. And so I was, last December, when I conceived of this plan, I was kind of, I was very kind of afraid. And, it was with fear and trembling that I decided to hold this meeting. And
well, now, that brings up something that goes both with Dulce and with the Area 51 work that you did, and that's this question. Have you ever been harassed or threatened because of your work at Area 51 and now at Dulce?
Yeah, no, actually, Kevin, the only time I was threatened was in 1991, when I was leading a caravan of about 10 cars from California to Area 51, and we were driving on Groom Lake Road to go to the boundary line early in the morning, 1991 in May, and that's when we observed about 4:30 to 4:45 a.m. a brilliant light or object being maneuvered over the Groom Mountains, and we were watching that But then we were suddenly approached by the security guard trucks or Bronco type Jeeps that shone a bright light to us so that we won't be able to see that thing over the mountain. But anyway, a half an hour later, we went to the boundary line, and then we decided to go back on the highway. And while we were driving on the dirt road, 10 car caravan, we were suddenly harassed physically by the dangerous maneuvering of an unmarked dark military helicopter, which came right in front of our cars as we were driving about 45 miles per hour to get away from this aerial harassment of this military helicopter, which came almost about 20 feet above our cars. And at one time, I thought that they were going to actually attack us. And, you know, that was the most, you know, fearful moment in my life, actually. But fortunately, that the harassment ended, you know, right when we reached the Highway 375. And when we reached Highway 375, we were all stopped by the Lincoln County Sheriff Patrol, Sheriff Department, and we were told out to get out of the cars, and we were told to, you know, show our IDs, and we were, you know, practically detained right at the highway for about, you know, 45 minutes.
Now, at no time were you across the boundary, is that correct?
No time we crossed the boundary. We were always on a public land, and of course, you know, we have every reason to be on public land. We have every right to be, you know, on public land. So,
well, now let me tell you something. And you probably know this, but I want all of our viewers and listeners to understand this. If you don't know this, folks, you need to know this. It was illegal. It wasn't just ill-advised. It was illegal for the sheriff to stop these folks and tell them to show him their IDs. The only time that can happen, at least when there is the Constitution in play, which it isn't very much in play these days, but when the Constitution is in play, the only time that they can stop you is, number one, if your car matches the description of a car used in a crime, you match the description, or they observe you committing some violation. All right, so if there's no violation and you don't match the description, and the car doesn't match the description of a car or a person involved in a crime, then it is illegal for him to stop you and say, let me see your ID.
That's correct, Kevin. Not only did they ask for all our IDs, but they asked for, believe it or not, Social Security number. My Social Security number was taken down by Lincoln County Sheriff Department, and you know, I wasn't aware that this was illegal at that time. And but anyway, you know, I did, you know, I became a little paranoid about this whole thing. But other than that, you know, I haven't actually been harassed except that one time. But you know, the next time took place in the year 2000. The year 2000, we had another rally at Area 51, and this time, it wasn't a big rally. In 1991, when we had the first people's rally at Area 51, there were about 240 people all over from the United States and even from Canada. But in 2000, when we held the second rally, there were only about less than 100 people. But what happened was we were almost driven over by a speeding truck handled by, you know, driven by an Area 51 employee. An Area 51 employee who was also the Lincoln County Commissioner at that time, drove right over the middle of the dirt road, and he was speeding about 55 miles an hour, and on this dirt road, and we were right there on the road, and he saw us, but he kept speeding into the gate of Area 51, and we were almost run over by that speeding truck. And actually, this driver was a Lincoln County commissioner. By the way, Lincoln County handles all the matters about, fines and so on concerning Area 51, because Area 51 is under the Lincoln County, boundary as far as, legally. And anyway, this person who was a Lincoln County commissioner and also an Area 51 employee at the same time, he tried to run over us, and that became news.
Oh, I would think it would be news. You know, one of the things, Norio, that I say frequently on the show, and I know it must be a thorn in the sides of those who want to be secret keepers, some of the smartest minds in the world are working on this secret technology, and they are some of the dumbest script writers. And here's what I mean by that. We start talking about something here on the show that is really hot, really, provocative, and all of a sudden our telephones get cut, or they'll interrupt our audio signal, or, they think that that's, going to accomplish the mission, and the mission is to keep people from hearing this information. The problem with that is, it's just like taking a big yellow highlighter pen and highlighting everything the guy just said before you cut him off the phone. And it's just like highlighting it for the whole audience and saying, pay attention to this. This is hot stuff. That's not too smart. And, I say to these guys all the time, you need better script writers.
A lot of people have no idea that from 1988 all the way to the year 2000, the Air Force was paying the Lincoln County Department, the county office, $85,000 a year, every year, just to have the Lincoln County Sheriff Department harass the curiosity seekers who try to go to the public land area right next to Area 51. And this went on for many years. $85,000 a year just for the Air Force to call the Lincoln County Sheriff Department and to harass the visitors over there, because the security system at Area 51 is not allowed to have any contact with civilians.
All right, we have to step away for a break. I'll talk about a class action lawsuit when we come back. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Norio Hayakawa. And before we went away, we were talking about all these folks that have been, over the years, harassed by the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office. And if that actually has happened, and these people were, some people do break the law out there, and they get caught. But if they've been harassed and they had not violated the law, they have grounds for a class action lawsuit against that sheriff and against that sheriff's office, against the deputies involved, and they can get all of that $85,000 a year plus a lot more. It is unconstitutional. It is illegal for the police to do that. If they, in fact, did it, then they are liable. They broke the law. They violated constitutional rights.
That's correct, Kevin. What happened was, as I mentioned to you a minute ago, Former Lincoln County commissioner by the name of James Manor was also employed at Area 51 at that time. He was a computer, he's a computer specialist, and he worked at Area 51, and he's the one that tried to run over us with his speeding pickup truck as he went to work at Area 51. And, you know, but I forgave him publicly, but that shows you that there's something fishy going on, you know, in all of this. And
well, and that's also illegal. That's attempted homicide.
I'm not afraid to mention this because anybody can find out about this person. It's on the public record. It's in the newspaper. It was on a TV news in Las Vegas when, you know, we were almost overrun by that truck driven by Mr. James Manor. Who was employed, and he probably still is employed at Area 51.
What he had, what did he have to say about the incident?
Yeah, he and there is a strange connection between Lincoln County you know.
No, but what did he have to say about trying to run over you with the pickup?
Well, he said he didn't see us, or he said that he didn't know what to think of it. He just tried to run over us, you know. And the BLM land, BLM police officer caught that action, and then Mr. James Manor was fined by the Bureau of Land Management, federal, you know, authority. Only $100. That was the fine, and he later on apologized and paid the $100. But you know, that's it's just ridiculous. But you know, things like this are happening in many parts of the country. And you know, Kevin, since I live in New Mexico, what happened in 1990 in New Mexico in Dulce was also illegal. What happened was, I was, you know, conducting an interview on the street in Dulce, and we were suddenly arrested, detained, actually was stopped and arrested, and taken to the police office in Dulce, and we were also being asked to show our IDs, and you know, we just asked him why was it wrong for us to be interviewing the Hickory Apache Indian people on the street and asking about, you know, whether they had seen strange lights in the sky or military helicopters in this area, which most of them did. But we asked the Dulce police chief if this was anything illegal that we were doing, and he refused to comment until he took all of our IDs, and he took us into his office and detained us for 1 hour, and at the very end of that detainment, we asked him again, is it true that there is a governmental base in Dulce? And his answer was, he became really upset at us, and he said he doesn't want to talk about it. So his answer was strange. It wasn't confirming or denying that there's something in Dulce.
Is that guy still the police chief?
No, he actually, he retired.
He needs to retire. That's illegal. That's unconstitutional. It's un-American, and he needs to go to jail for it.
The thing about this is in the jurisdiction of the Native American land, and Dulce is part of the Hickory Apache Reservation. And, you know, the United States government, after many years of study, the United States government conveniently uses the Indian reservation areas to conduct certain clandestine operations and clandestine experiments such as biological warfare testing and so on. And this is exactly what has been happening in the Dulce area. There are many local residents, and including some ranchers in Dulce that I know, testify to the fact that there is and has been, and there could still be a governmental facility in the Archuleta Mountain next to Archuleta Mesa, right outside of Dulce, where the government may have conducted bovine disease research using, well, you know, and then also biological warfare research. For example, the use of, you know, the bovine disease and so on, because they were also working on, you know, checking out the cows. And I know a rancher over there who lost about 17 cows between 1975 and 1985. And this rancher, by the name of Edmund Gomez and his ranch, he lost 17 cows and the equivalent of $100,000 between 1975 and 1985. And the whole family had to move out of Dulce because it was, you know, just they lost money. And they are convinced that the government was experimenting on bovine disease or biological warfare things using cattle and you know, diseases like mad cow type thing and all other strange experiments.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and this is the reason why I held the Dulce Underground Base Conference this past March.
All right, let's talk about that. Now, Phil Schneider was a big name in years past, and he was out there telling the world that, in fact, there was a base there and that there had been a gunfight, well, a battle between Delta Force personnel and some extraterrestrials. And he was talking about that there were all kinds of biological experiments being done underground. And, of course, he's gone. He passed away. And with rather suspicious circumstances. Does anyone in the area so far, has anyone in the area talked with you about anything like that?
Well, the fact is that the bulk of the population of the town of Dulce, which is you know, only about 2,600 people right now, there used to be about 4,000 people in Dulce, but many of the younger people in Dulce have moved out of the reservation and moved to Albuquerque and other places. Plus, there have been a lot of cases of radiation poisoning near Dulce, New Mexico, from 1985 on, you know, and part of the reason was because the government exploded an atomic bomb in 1967 underground about 22 miles south of Dulce in a Carson National Forest area. This was done in 1967, and this was the second atomic nuclear explosion underground that the U.S. government conducted after World War II. The first one was near Carlsbad, but this one was in Dulce, 22 miles south of Dulce. And that was initially, the government's explanation was that this was for atomic use for peaceful purposes. And it was called the Plowshare Program. And but the main reason, they said, was to ease the flow of natural gas in the area. But what happened was the underground explosion about 2 miles underground.
Norio, we have to step away for a break. We'll come back right there and pick up right there when we get back from this break. Don't go away, folks. More interesting stuff coming your way. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Norio Hayakawa, and if you missed the first hour, boy, you missed a bunch of good stuff. We want to pick up right where we were, Norio. You were telling us about this atomic underground blast that happened in 1967. They said it was for the purpose of easing the flow of natural gas, and then we had to step away for break.
That's correct, Kevin. What happened in 1967 was a strange experiment conducted by the U.S. government under the guise of the Peaceful Use of Atomic Energy Program. And what happened was the government knew well in advance that creating a nuclear explosion underground in that area, in the forest area, could eventually have a leakage of radiation in the surrounding areas. And that is a fact. The town of Dulce has a high rate of cancer, has always had a cancer rate increase ever since that explosion. And the radiation keeps seeping throughout the forest area, and also this could be one reason that the government was trying to find out the radiation level by choosing the cattle in that Dulce area, because there are many cattle ranchers over there. And government possible scenario is that the government was testing the radiation level of cows from 1975 on. And but that's just only one explanation. You know, by the way, as I mentioned to you, the town of Tulsi had about 4,000 people, but now it's 2,600. There's a high rate of cancer there. And also, you know, the other thing is that there's a suspicion that the government made a deal with the Indian reservation to use part of the nearby mesas to possibly store toxic substances underground, in addition to conducting different types of you know, research into biowarfare things. And what happened was, you know, as I told you, at the conference that I held this year in March at Dulce, in the largest and the one and the only hotel over there, there were about 130 people that showed up, and many of them were local residents. And to my surprise, one of the attendees was the former police chief by the name of Hoyt Velarde, who arrested me back in 1990. he told me at the conference this year that the reason he arrested me at that time was because because of safety. He thought that he had to do something, and but still to this day, I don't see any reason for having detained us over there. And but anyway, I made peace with him this year at the conference, and he was kind enough to you know, move the conference to a larger place, because the hotel was so crowded, the lobby area was so crowded with people, that the fire department came and told us to move the conference to another location nearby. And Hoyt Velarde, the police former police chief, suggested, why don't we move to city like a hall.
Mm-hmm.
So he was kind enough to accommodate us into the new location, and he was very cooperative. But he retired, so to my surprise, he told us that he is very interested in the continuing research into the suspected base, as well as his interest in the Bigfoot sightings, because he is now a member of the Bigfoot Research Organization in New Mexico. And so we make peace with each other, and this is the start of something new in Dulce, and more Jicarilla Apache Native people are coming out. They used to be afraid to talk about the base at Dulce, because the whole town of Dulce has been associated with the rumors of an underground U.S. joint alien U.S. underground biolab. There's something going on over there. As I told you, Kevin, I got in touch with this former rancher who testified at the conference this year that many of his cows were marked with phosphorescent marking and tracking device a few days after those particular cows were mutilated. And then the rancher also found samples of like gas masks near the cattle mutilation sites. And he's convinced that it was the government who was conducting those experiments during those years.
It very well could be. But look, you are on the front end at this point of investigating the Dulce thing. And, the idea, is there an underground base at Dulce and other issues as well? Now, let me tell you a real story. This actually happened here just a couple of weeks ago. My producer, from time to time, I ask him to, I have a topic in mind that I want to do a show or two or three shows on. And I ask him just to go find on the internet the most compelling, interesting information that's available and print out a list of the sites for me. And then I go research them myself and choose the ones that I want to use for the shows. So I was asking him to check into underground cities. And there are functioning cities that are underground as I speak to you right now. They have shopping malls, condominiums, etc. So I had asked him to check that out. As he was checking that out, Google pulls up a whole bunch of sites and you'd click on them and look at them, right? And so that's all he was doing. He was clicking on the links that were pulled up by Google. And he clicks on one, it goes to an underground base, a page about an underground base in Arizona. And I won't mention the name of it because of what happened next. Within a few seconds after opening that page, a warning pops up on his screen that says, you are not authorized to access this page. You have accessed a restricted page on NSA website or something like that. And we are now gathering information from your computer. At which point he reached over and shut the computer off. Now, first thing I have to say about that is, come on, government. Gee whiz. If you don't want your site to be looked at, don't let it be listed at Google. I mean, all he did was click a link at Google and took him to your site. That's your fault. That's your own stupid security measures on your website. Second thing I've got to say about that is, that indicates that there are these underground bases doing things they don't want us to know about. And I can live with that. I can live with the fact that there are some things that need to be classified and we don't need to know about it. But they are for real. Now, the reason I tell you that story is you're on the front end of investigating Dulce. If it is for real, you may run into, on a physical level, some of that resistance that he ran into on the internet.
That's correct. There's no question that there are underground bases all over the country, mm-hmm. but especially places like New Mexico is very important in the sense that, yes, New Mexico is the first location where in 1945, after the conclusion of World War II, the United States government brought in hundreds and hundreds of scientists and former SS intelligence officers from Germany, and they all came to Albuquerque, New Mexico, in 1945, and they were brought to Kirtland Army Air Base at that time. And then later on, these German scientists and also former SS officers were transferred to locations like, White Sands area. Some of those who were specializing in rocketry were transferred to White Sands areas, and then others were transferred to Los Alamos. So basically, as strange as it may sound, in 1947, when the CIA and then also the National Security Act was passed in 1947, creating an NSA in 1947. Many of the initial contributors were former German intelligence officers, and this is the basis of CIA, believe it or not. And because the German intelligence officers were, had a real interesting know-how, a good know-how of intelligence techniques. And one of the intelligence techniques that the Germans provided the U.S. was the technique of the use and manipulation of misinformation and creation of disinformation to cover certain things. Now, going back to New Mexico, why it is important is because New Mexico is the U.S. Leading edge concentrated military technology development research area in the whole United States. We have the Los Alamos National Laboratory, only about 60 miles south east of Dulce, only 60 miles south. And Los Alamos has the world's leading edge technology in biogenetics and human genome programs, the DNA research, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. So I wouldn't be surprised at all, going back to the theory of underground bases, that there could be physical underground communication tunnels or systems joining Los Alamos and the surrounding areas such as Dulce. I wouldn't be surprised, because in 1955 the U.S. already had humongous drilling machines, and so imagine the technology now that the United States government, or the covert part of the United States government, has.
When you say drilling machine, people need to understand it's atomic powered.
That's correct.
It is atomic powered, and it actually doesn't drill. We say that it's drilling, but actually what it does is it superheats the rock and soil in front of it, melts it, and spins it off as a glass shell around a tunnel. That's
correct.
That's how it happens. All right, here's what I want to do. I want us to go to the telephone lines and allow our audience to join us. And folks, the telephone lines are open, and the telephone number is 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. As always, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message. You do that by going to my website, scroll down, you'll see where it says flash message, just click on that, and you can send me a flash message if you don't want to make the international long distance call. However, if you want to call us from anywhere in the world, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. Let's go to the telephone, and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Yeah, Ryan.
Yeah, there's an important whistleblower that I think is important by the name of Don Phillips. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he was part of the Disclosure Project, and he claims that he worked with Kelly Johnson, and that they've actually devised and developed and used these handheld scanners that he says can diagnose and detect cancer, and that they've even used them to cure cancer with their handheld devices. And this guy worked with Lockheed Skunk Works with Kelly Johnson, and he's out whistleblowing right now. And I guess the question for you, Norio, is have you heard of this? And how much money do you think is spent annually from the taxpayers to go to programs like this that are not even available to the general public because they don't want to share it with everybody else?
Yeah, that's a valid question. There's no doubt about it. The black programs are, made such that it's difficult to keep track of the expenditures, because they're not really required to disclose the particulars of how much money is going to what kind of programs. And you know, this is a it's a strange thing, and it's billions of dollars. In fact, it is, I could say that it's billions of dollars going into new infrastructure at Area 51. Even right now, as I told you know, Kevin, today, there are completing almost 99% completed the new humongous hangar just about a half mile south of Area 51. We don't know the purpose of that hangar, but it's a very, very state of the art technology, and we don't know the purpose of it. We don't know the full purpose of the other technologies that are being concentrated in places like Area 51 and Dugway Proving Grounds, and you know, other areas in Southern California, the as well as New Mexico. There are so many places that you know, the government is you know, conducting things. And as I told Kevin, it's a strange thing that the U.S. government sometimes even conducts things that conveniently at Native American reservation areas, so that they could be you know, free from you know, civil the you know, litigations.
Well, yeah, that's because a lot of people don't know, but they need to know. When you're on a reservation, you're on a sovereign country.
That's right. This is exactly what happened in Cabazon, California, not too far away from Palm Springs. Cabazon Indian Reservation in the 1980s had was filled with scandals about Wackenhut Corporation and other you know, U.S. defense contractors working on fuel, air, explosives, and also biological programs. And the Indian tribe was accused of you know, money illegal money laundering and so on, illegal money transaction with the government. And it became a huge scandal back in the mid-80s. But you know, it's this is the same thing that's happening at places like Dulce, New Mexico, where the entire area is part of the sovereign nation of Hickory Apache. So
yeah, it's they are sovereign nations. They have their own government, including police and judges and prosecutors. They have their own president. Now, it may shock
that's
a lot
right.
of people, but they do. All right, let's go to the phone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. Yeah, I got a question for your guest.
Mm-hmm.
I was browsing his website, and I see he has some stuff on there about Bluebeam. I got a couple of questions, if this one doesn't take up a lot of time.
It's all right. Go ahead.
Is that real? What can you tell me about that?
That is a very good topic. The Project Bluebeam is the alleged NASA's covert program that was devised back in the 60s for future use. But the idea is to manipulate the minds of the enemy and so on. In other words, even civilians. by the use of high-tech equipment such as the new types of holographic projection devices and new types of electromagnetic frequencies to actually convince the observer of this technology that he or she is seeing something that is something that is real, when in fact it's not real. And this is what happened in the Dulce area, according to the Gabe Valdez. Gabe Valdez is a former state patrol officer of New Mexico who was in charge of the Dulce area. He testified this year that the government did conduct what's known as the elementary level of the Project Blue Beam. In other words, staging of a UFO-related event and a series of UFO sightings, which were staged by the use of holographic projection devices on Alachua Mesa, and making the observers believe that they were witnessing a UFO contact landing and a UFO, the flight close to the Alachua Mesa. This technology was actually first revealed by a Canadian journalist by the name of Serge Monast in 1993, and he came onto the internet and he revealed himself as a Canadian investigative journalist, and he revealed that he got an information from an inside source, from the NASA, that this was the future plan of NASA, is to, using this kind of technology to orchestrate certain events in the future. And I think that the first testing of this device took place in the Dulce area in the mid-1980s and 1990s, and still may be going on in other locations, because the hologramic projection technology is developing every year. There has been a tremendous leap in the technology, and so we're living right now in a world which is really filled with the things that it's hard to distinguish whether something is real or not. You brought up a good point about Project Blue Beam. By the way, the Serge Monast, who was the first investigative journalist to reveal this thing, he died mysteriously from a heart attack in 1994, 1 year after he came out with this information. And
no kidding.
He died in Canada. It's an unfortunate thing, of a heart attack and under suspicious circumstances.
I was wondering, Canada seems to have, of course, I guess New England does too, but Canada seems to have massive UFO sightings. Is this any part of that blue beam? Do you know?
Well, it's very hard to say, because you have a lot of sightings in many locations, but it is difficult to we're living right now in a world of high technology, and it's really hard. See, the bottom line to all of this is this, that, well, I've been studying the UFO phenomenon since 1962, and, this phenomenon, especially after World War II, probably slightly, a few years before World War II, this phenomenon happened to be, being cited all around the globe, from around 1943. But what happened is that, unfortunately, we have yet to come up with any physical evidence.
Okay, Norio, we have to step away for a break. We'll pick up there when we come back, and we'll take more of your calls. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Norio Hayakawa. And Norio, did you want to finish your thought? If you do, go ahead. If not,
yes.
We have a call holding.
I think this is very important, Kevin. In my opinion, the United States government does know of the existence of this phenomena called UFO phenomena ever since 1947. The only thing that, in my opinion, is hindering the government from disclosing any of this is because this phenomenon may not completely be a physical phenomenon, but it could be paranormal, the result of paranormal activity. And the government, I don't think, knows how to explain this phenomenon. This is the reason why they've been hiding this this thing. And I was talking about the events going on at Dulce, New Mexico, in the Native American reservation areas. You know that the American Indian people are very deeply rooted in their religious spiritual beliefs.
Yes.
And cultural traditions, and they all believe that they their ancestors are from underground, actually. And you know, this is one of the reasons why the U.S. government conveniently utilized these reservation areas to conduct experiments not only in biological warfare but in mind control and other things, knowing that the local residents are filled with the belief systems that, you know, about all of these paranormal activity. And the fact is this: I believe that there is paranormal activity in the Dulce area. The paranormal phenomena, we just don't know what it is. And you know, I think we're talking about the interaction between a parallel dimension and parallel intelligence that is playing games with us or manipulating our thoughts for probably a future type of scenario to come. And who knows? I think that this is the reason, in my opinion, that the U.S. is reluctant to come out with a statement about the UFO phenomenon, because the government itself has been perplexed ever since 1947. I think the event in Roswell was somehow staged.
And so you think that there's some sort of a mind control or mind manipulation going on with these extraterrestrials. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, it's Mike from Kentucky.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Norio, I met you in April 30th, May the 1st out at Rachel, Nevada, at that conference back there where Bob Lazar was there.
That's right. That was, in the 1990s. When we had a large ultimate seminar right at the parking lot of Rachel, the little alien at that time.
That's
and,
correct.
There was a huge military tent at that ultimate seminar. And you remember, I think I mentioned somewhere else, but I asked Joe Travis, the owner of the Little Alien, in 1993, I think, that when we had that ultimate UFO seminar in which Bob Lazar showed up, asked the owner of the Little Alien where he got that huge military tent from, you know, and he told me that he got it from the base. In fact, Joe Travis and the Travis family at that time and some people in Rachel were connected with the base, as Area 51, and the base knew that we were going to have a huge seminar and going to invite Bob Lazar and so on, Joe Knapp and so on, and that is why Joe Travis told me they went to the base and borrowed that huge tent from the base at Groom Lake. And I was very shocked because they borrowed about 200 chairs too. And so there is definitely a relationship between the town of Rachel and the base at Area 51, even today.
I used to correspond back and forth, Norio, back in the 90s. And then somebody told me that you had sort of dropped away from this, so I decided not to, you know, bother you since you had made the personal choice to drop away.
Yes, I made that choice a few years ago because I became despondent about a lot of things because it wasn't getting anywhere. But I realized, you know, just a few years ago that I need to keep investigating all of these things because, I think it affects us in so many ways, and I just can't let this go. So this is the reason why I am still, being active in a new phase. In a new phase in all of this, and I think that we're headed to some kind of change in the consciousness of the way that people think. And I think, you know, I think it's going to affect me too, because I think in a few more years, I think the way people think will start gradually changing, and I think that is when I think the world could be ready for some kind of a revelation. But right now, unfortunately, the mainstream considers the whole study of ufology as almost like pseudoscience. But I think that will change as we go into next year, and as we go into the year 2011. I think there'll be more people that will be in tune with the what is taking place, and then possibly the consciousness of a lot of people may start changing, and they may start accepting other ideas, because right now most people only talk in terms of linear terminology and the so-called the scientific methodology, most people are reluctant to go beyond that. And I think in this world, there's no question that there are things that we cannot see that coexist with us. And science like quantum physics are going into this kind of study that there are dimensional levels of reality. I think the U.S. government knows about this, but they don't come out and say it. And I think it's part of a cover-up. And what happened in 1947 could have been some kind of a coerced staging of event as the first step to manipulate the mind of people for future events. And, I think,
So it could have been the first steps of the elementary steps of Project Bluebeam.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take this next call. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Well, this is Mike from Mississippi.
Hi, Mike. Reach around and turn your volume down. We're hearing me on delay back there.
All right, am I good now?
You're good. What's on your mind?
I have a question for Norio. Talking about the holograms earlier, you know, and the advancements of them, you know, yeah, by the government and everything, and I just want to get his take on if he thinks that our government used holograms as the, you know, the airplanes that hit the World Trade Center on 9/11. I'll take the answer
That's
offline.
That's a very good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. I'm not an expert on that situation of 9/11, but I've heard a lot of interesting stories. But, the fact is this. CNN did report that in 1991, the use of hologram was tested in Iraq during the initial stages of the war in Iraq. It was part of some kind of psychological operations that was tested. And I think that the image of some kind of an image appeared in the sky over the hill I don't know the wet atmospheric condition at that time, but in order to project the hologramic images, sometimes I think there needs to be proper wet atmospheric conditions, like a lot of clouds. As I said.
Well, and there were a lot of clouds over New York on 9/11.
Pardon?
There were a lot of clouds, by the way, over New York on 9/11.
Aware of that.
Yeah.
You know, but anything is possible because, the technology is here and it is advancing by the day. So we're living in a world where we need to have a lot of, the ability to distinguish what is holographic and what is real.
Physical. Yeah, what's real, what's fiction. All right, let's take this next call. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. And the caller has vacated the line. When you call, ladies and gentlemen, if I put you on hold, you can hear the show in your phone. If you hear that, stay there. Because you get way at the end of the line then, okay, if you hang up. All right, 623-444-5889 is the telephone number. Toll free, 888-223-4599. Again, the numbers are, main number is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number, 888-223-4599. And if you have a question or comment for Norio Hayakawa, then you just dial one of those numbers. You'll be magically transported right into the studio. And when you are, stay on hold. We will get to you. Okay, Norio, one of the things, well, let's take this call, and I'll bring that subject up a little bit later. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, my name is Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Listen, I just wanted to say...
where are you calling from?
I'm from North Carolina.
Okay, Tony.
You know, I like your host. I mean, I like the person you have on tonight, Norio. It seems to me like he has a environmental agenda. But we've really not talked about UFOs or anything else that he seems to think that would be there, Roger.
All right. What about that, Norio?
What was the question as far as...
Well, he says you seem to have an environmental agenda, but we haven't really talked about UFOs or anything else that you think might be there at Dulce.
Well, you know, there are many, many, many reports, even today, of people seeing strange objects over the sky of Dulce. In fact, I'm in touch with Mr. Gabe Julian, who was a former police officer, a different one in Dulce. He occasionally visits Albuquerque, and he tells me that people are still reporting strange lights and then the daytime objects over Dulce. There's no question that something is going on. You know that when we had the first...
Okay, let me ask both of you to just hang on. A break is taking over. Our mics are going dead. After this break, we'll pick up right there. And, Tony, you going to hang on for us?
Yeah, sure will.
All right. Hang on. We'll be back, folks. Welcome back. We are on Final Approach, ladies and gentlemen. That means we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. And if you've been thinking about calling us, you might start hitting that redial button. Tony, you still with me?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right. So, Norio, you were saying that there are reports, a lot of reports.
There are still reports of things being seen over the skies of Dulce, even a few weeks ago, I'm in touch with Mr. Gabe Julian, who was a former police officer over there, who testified at the conference this year in Dulce. But he tells me that there are people are still seeing things, but not only people see the strange lights in the night and the strange objects in the daytime, but the rampant military helicopter flying overflight over Dulce is quite common, and people of Dulce are bothered by the presence of military helicopters because they're nowhere near Dulce is any kind of military base. But the military flyovers come from Colorado, and in the 80s, the Delta forces were conducting war games right on Archuleta Mesa. Right next to Dulce. They were using the Delta forces, and then also they were using mock prop-up, buildings and the prop-up, huts and so on over Archuleta Mesa, and they did conduct exercises without a specific invitation from the Dulce Hickory Apache Nation.
Well, there's also this.
There are things being seen in the sky, and this is the reason why I'm still interested in the UFO phenomenon ever since I came to New Mexico in 1965. The reason I came to New Mexico in 1965, one of the reasons was because of the sighting of by the State Patrol officer Lonnie Zamora in Socorro. Outside of Socorro, he had witnessed a brilliant metallic object landing on a desert about 500 feet before him, in front of him. And that was the beginning of the my interest in the UFO sightings in New Mexico. You know,
Well, look, there's also this, and we need to stay aware of this. Ecology issues are something that people who have contact with extraterrestrials, very, very often the extraterrestrials are talking to them about the ecology and, you know, that we're killing the planet. And so if you've got a place where there is a lot of toxic stuff stored, that may be what is attracting the attention of these UFOs.
That is a good point, Kevin. No question about it. That is a very good point. But the bottom line of all of this, Kevin, is that there's no doubt in my mind that the United States government is aware of the reality of the UFO phenomenon. But the problem is that this is part of a paranormal phenomenon that exists in the world. And until the people of the world converts the idea, the thinking procedure, and accepts that there is more than physical aspects of reality in this world, until that change of consciousness, I think it'll be difficult to disclose anything. Just by disclosing the information on UFOs is not sufficient. For example, the French government and the British government disclosed a lot of files, but just disclosing the documents filed on sightings of UFOs is meaningless unless the government explains what this UFO phenomenon is, and the government so far is unable to come up with explanations themselves.
Well, you know, a cure for that would be for them to quit talking for the extraterrestrials and let the extraterrestrials speak for themselves. They could tell us
that
what their agenda is.
The only way, I think, is for the entities to physically manifest themselves in the open, and until that time, I think it'll be difficult for any disclosure.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phone for our final call. Caller, your first name, and from where are you calling?
Stefan from Quebec City, Kevin.
Hi, Stefan.
Mr. Nalakawa, I was wondering, what is your opinion on the recent discovery of 114? And also, what do you think the situation is with Bob Lazar? Do you think he's back over there at S4 in Area 51?
You're talking about Element 115.
114. It just got discovered today, or yesterday.
Okay.
At Berkeley in California.
I see. Well, that's a very interesting thing, because, you know, the more and more, you know, we get, you know, go into discovering things, the more we can be assured that there's, you know, some of these ideas expressed by people like Bob Lazar, you know, may not be too far off. But, you know, the Bob Lazar, Mr. Bob Lazar, moved from Albuquerque last year to Michigan, and he is still conducting business with some, indirectly with defense contractors for the Navy, and indirectly with other parts of the military. And that shows that Mr. Bob Lazar does know things that most people don't know. And so I just can't downgrade Mr. Bob Lazar's testimony. Anything is possible.
I think anything is possible as well. Stefan, thank you for the call. We're almost out of time. I have to run, but thanks for the call. Very interesting. You know, the Bob Lazar story is one that A lot of people have said this guy is a fake, he's a fraud, he's this, he's that. But you know, a whole bunch of his story does check out. And
he's a genius, and I can tell he's a genius. And he still conducts a business, you know, through his United Nuclear. His United Nuclear company is not only about, you know, gadgets, scientific gadgets, but he does do business on a more deeper level of technology to limited, you know, military, you know, groups like the Navy.
All right, what's next for you at Dulce? Is there going to be another conference? Or are you finding any new information?
Well, I did the conference this year, but a lot of people are asking that we have another conference. In fact, the police department of Dulce, through Mr. Hoyt Velarde, promised us that next time we hold a conference, we could use the larger conference hall of the police department. And that was a big shock to us. I mean, it's unbelievable. That
so you've gone from being arrested by that police department to being an honored guest.
That is very unbelievable, but that is the fact. And I'm still going to continue with this research. This is, you know, it's going to affect all of us.
Do you think that there is, in fact, a base just outside of Dulce? Do you think it's for real?
I personally believe that there is a governmental facility. We don't know where it is. It could be inside Dulce, the town of Dulce itself, or it could be on the Archuleta Mountain, a few miles northwest of Dulce, in the nearby ranch areas as a disguise. They could be a governmental facility. I don't know the scale of that facility, but circumstantial evidence show that there's still something over there. And that's the opinion of Mr. Hoyt Velarde, as well as several former police officers in Dulce Town itself. So.
Okay, Norio, we are out of time. We have hit the end of the show. And I want to thank you for being with us this evening. If you will, just stay on the telephone with me for a moment as I close the show. All right, folks, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.